Okay, so this Sean fact says a copy of Shaun of the Dead is in the bin of DVDs. It was renamed Zombies Party and has a price tag over Simon Pegg's face.
Sean fact.
Sean fact.
Sean fact.
Sean fact.
I assure you that this punishment for last night's indiscretion will be quite severe. Tell me, do you like ice cream?
And then you see Simon Pegg's face just go, like, we're a podcast, so I have to display this through audio means. So I want you to close your eyes and imagine someone making the face that expresses this sound.
Well, let me just tell you, we won't be short on Chunky Monkey for any time this month. Well, it's 11:30 and I haven't called that lunch.
Yeah, it's your first day. Let's go ahead and make things easy on everybody.
It cuts to a beer being set in front of Nicholas and like, he's not going to drink on the job. It's immediately taken away and replaced with a cranberry juice. And he like they go up to his face and he's got face on. He's like mad.
He's not happy. No. He's not happy.
No.
Yeah. But so it's
everybody else is drinking though. Mm-hmm. And they're all chain smoking and stuff.
Right.
Hilarious.
So everybody is sitting around the table and because it's his first day, he's going to be there. Everybody's asking him questions. Like Fisher is like, whoa, what made you want to come down to Stanford so you could tell us all how to do my job or our jobs?
No, I have no intention. He says something like, no, I have no intention of doing that.
Right. Like that. And then the Andes are just like on the complete opposite side of the table, which represents just how much they are in opposition to him.
Yeah. They see him as a threat because he would be a much better detective than mm-hmm. they are.
Yeah. Because he is.
Yeah. But he's like, nobody's going to stab you round here.
Yeah.
And that's when Danny's ears perk up and he basically cuddles up.
Angel's just like, have you ever been stabbed? And he was like, no. I was like, well, I have. And that's when you hear like this ka-ching in the background and you see Danny's face just like kind of light up and he like scoots over closer to Angel's like, or he's actually pretty like reserved right afterwards. He's like, have you seen a lot of action, Sergeant Angel? And he's just like.
Doesn't he ask him about being stabbed first? And then he goes, it's the single most painful experience of my entire life.
Yeah.
And then Danny like gets in real sincere like and he's like, what was the second most painful experience of your life?
Yeah. And like at one point they talk about how Angel had like shot someone.
It's not something that you want to do.
Yeah.
Like, or something like that.
It's not really like touched upon too deeply, but mm-hmm. you can tell it makes him feel uncomfortable.
He doesn't want to shoot guns anymore.
Right. And so that's when we, at the very end of the scene, when Danny says, what was the second most painful? And then he just is like,
it's time for a montage.
Montage of Danny and Angel.
I love expositional questions. Like, mm-hmm. I love just like random thing, like getting to know somebody really quick. You hear the term icebreaker questions and it like drives you freaking crazy. You don't want to do it. You're like, oh, it smacks of like useless meetings where I'm going to have to be like, my name's Naomi and I like the nighttime because it starts with an N and I really don't care. Mm-hmm. Right. But like being like, what's the most painful thing you've ever experienced?
Yeah.
Because Danny loves action films. We learn more severely later. But what it is he's had this position in this humdrum town in this way that's like really rather boring. And up until now, Nicholas has had this high-paced London experience where, you know, he's been injured in the line of duty. And what is Danny's been bored.
Mm-hmm. Like one of the first questions he asks him while they're doing their walking around the town doing their beat. He's like, ever fire two guns whilst jumping through the air?
No.
Ever fire one gun whilst jumping through the air?
No.
You seen Lethal Weapon?
No.
You seen Die Hard?
No.
You've seen Bad Boys 2?
No.
You ain't seen Bad Boys 2?
No.
It's just like rattle off.
So good.
Yeah. And then at the end of the day, because that is literally their entire day, Danny just asking questions and them walking around. I like to imagine that was the entire day. They go and after work, Angel goes to an NWA meeting where we're introduced to, you know, more characters.
Yeah.
And
so the Neighborhood Watch Association is what NWA is. And I have titled this scene, Cringy Introductions Turns into the Masons. Because that's accurate.
Yes. And like they're talking about, like, you know, we really need to crack down on some of the problems here, like the living statue. And it's just this guy.
Oh my gosh. Lydia, we did this yesterday and we did it again today. At the end of his introductions at the house, at the police station, they go up to the neighborhood watch liaison's room where they surveil the entire town. And he's like, gotta get rid of this human statue. And he shows him, he's like, he's been here since 10, 11, 12, 1 o'clock, and hands pictures of these stills of the surveillance video. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we need to take care of this or we'll be balls deep in jugglers, right? And so then the chief like balls up that picture and like throws it away right away. But then we come to the NWA meeting, and what was like this thing shrugged off by the chief, they're like, yes, we must deal with this.
Yes. The thing that you need to know about the statue is it's just a guy covered head to toe with gold. He's got like a gold top hat. He's got a gold outfit. His face and hands are gold.
His hands are up in a like a jazz hands still motion where he's like, yeah.
He's got some dedication.
He was there for 4+ hours.
Yeah.
Good job on you, human statue.
Seriously.
Show some dedication, neighborhood mm-hmm. watch.
Yeah, they don't really have any like for performance. I mean,
you know you don't got big energy if you're not willing to be balls deep in jugglers.
And then the next day, you have the sergeant is, he's out of school with some kids. Uh-huh. And he's just talking to him about, you know, police stuff. And he's like, any questions? And then you see that.
Oh.
And it's Danny, and he's got his hand up, and he asks a question.
He's sitting on the floor crisscross like the other kids. And he's like, yes, you.
Do you remember what he says?
I do, but I don't. I kind of dig your Danny.
Okay, okay. I mean,
here's the thing. Ladies and applauders. Applauders and gentlemen. Ladies, gentlemen, and applauders variating on thereupon. Variating? Yeah. It's not a word. I dig how you say I am a Danny, and Lydia's more, maybe not hardcore, but much more of a Nicholas than I am.
True.
Okay. And Jen gets to be the audience. We've decided. You're the camera view mm-hmm. of whoever this is.
You are the fourth wall.
Exactly.
Ooh.
Hang a picture on that.
Anyways, so whereas I, in real life, those are our personas. Like, I love when you do Danny's voice. So could you tell us what Danny says when he goes, ooh, 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 ooh.
He's like, is it true that there's a place in a man's head that if you shoot it, it will blow up?
Guy does a emotional eye roll, but holds it together, and then it cuts away.
Yeah. Oh,
then, see, Tim Messenger.
Oh, yeah.
He's the reporter photographer for the town. He does the majority of the articles in the, whatever the name of the...
Sanford Citizen.
The newspaper. It seems like a daily reg. And they cut to a picture, a beauty shot of, like, all the kids lined up in their little maroon uniforms. And Tim starts asking unreasonable things. And this is just his life, I guess. Nicholas, he's like, can the teacher hold the gun? Can you handcuff the kids?
Mm-hmm.
Can you give the blonde girl your hat?
Yeah. It's like, I'm pretty sure that would be inappropriate.
Yeah, inappropriate for the... Illegal for the guns, yeah. Inappropriate for the handcuffs. And no, I just don't want to for the hat. And he's like, what does he say? Righto?
Righty-ho-ho.
He just takes the picture. Is that the end of that?
That's the end of that one. But then the next day, the Sanford Citizen comes out with this expose on the new sergeant. Do you know how Messenger messes that up?
Yeah, because it's something that I would do.
Yeah.
Instead of Sergeant Nicholas Angel, he's Officer Nicholas Angle.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, he opens up his locker and there's all of these, like, notices about it.
I will say this part. Danny leans in, he looks at it, and he goes, it weren't me that did that.
Yeah. So good. And then Angel walks through the station and...
Hey, Sergeant Angle.
Morning, Angle.
Morning, Angle.
Morning, Angle.
Morning, Angle.
And he just gets this, and then he goes to his desk and he plops down.
Visually upset.
Mm-hmm. And then he picks up the phone and someone's like, yes, the swan's gotten loose. And I was like, the swan's gotten loose? Really? What's your name? Peter Ian Staker. Peter Ian Staker. P.I. Staker. Piss Taker. Come on.
And then you know it's going to happen because this is the kind of comedic beat Simon Pegg does so incredibly well, that they cut to him standing in front of a guy with his trusty notebook out. And he's just like, yeah, sorry, Mr. Staker. Can you tell me the nature of the incident or whatever the hell he says?
Right. And this is cameo number, like, what is that, 35 at this point?
Well, since there's only 20 British actors, it's probably 15.
Okay, thank you. But this is Stephen Merchant. For like anybody who's watched Jojo Rabbit recently, mm-hmm. he was the Gestapo agent who comes in and does this brilliant scene where they say Heil Hitler for like 37 times.
In like a minute.
Yeah.
Because when somebody says Heil Hitler, you say Heil Hitler back. But if you...
But they got like eight people in the scene.
It reminds me of that old bit that's like, hello, doctor, doctor, hello, hello, yeah. doctor, 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 hello, mm-hmm. doctor. Like if it is Heil, 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 I don't want that on record of me saying that so many times. But like, yeah. It's pretty brilliant. I know him as the head accountant from The Good Place. Mm-hmm. That has cake in it too. He's just like, oh yeah, I want to get in there before there's no more quarter pieces left.
Right.
He's just a hilarious, brilliant comedian. And then Jen knew him too.
Oh, from Portal too.
Yeah, Wheatley.
Oh man, Wheatley was so good. I love a character you can just hate.
Yeah. And pretty much the swan is missing. Going back to the movie.
Yep.
The swan is missing. And there's this whole big montage of Danny and Angel trying to catch the swan.
Yes.
It's pretty great because anybody who's tried to wrangle up fowl.
Swans are like velociraptors that still think they're velociraptors.
Yes. They've never forgotten that they're dinosaurs. My neighbor brought over their geese to like hang out in the yard. Mm-hmm. And like one of them raised their head, how they point their nose up. And my brain went like primally back to when I was five and I would hang out with Jamie and she had a goose. And like I had to carry a stick in the yard. And when it would charge me, I would poke it in the chest. I'd be like, no. And it would be like, and I'd be like, she had a pet ostrich that bit me once, and I was not as scared of the ostrich as I was of the goose. My life is weird. Anyways, swans, I get it. They freak me out.
Yeah.
We had a lot of mallards in the last review that we did. Now we got a lot of swan.
Oh, yeah. Connectivity.
Like, there's like millions of different kinds of birds in the air. We're like, there's two birds. They're the same thing.
Okay.
So this is where they go to the car and he's like, there's always something happening. Nicholas says this to mm-hmm. Danny. He's like, you always got to be watching. There's always something happening. And Danny's unobservant. Like you think he's unobservant because he knows everybody in town. He knows everybody's business.
Yeah.
And so,
or he thinks he does.
Yeah. So why does he need to pay attention if he already knows everything that he needs to know about everybody?
Right. But Nicholas kind of points out some different things about some people who are coming through. Like one guy is just, you know, he's wearing this big overcoat.
It's warm outside. Why would you need the extra layer?
Then there you got this
Mr. Treacher.
And then you got this other guy who's in this like, what was it? It's a bright, but it's a bright purple. It's like, you know, not like macrame. It's like, what is it? It's like some shiny material.
Yeah.
Lycra. I don't know.
Lycra tracksuit.
Yeah. And he's got his hat over his head.
Why do you think he's got his hat down so low?
Because he's ugly.
Not inaccurate.
Yeah. And then they see this guy's large guy.
What's that big guy's story?
Oh, that's Michael Armstrong. Dad says he's got a child's mind. He lives out at some random place with his mom and his sister.
Are they as big as he is?
Who?
His mom and his sister.
Same person. And that's when Nicholas is like, okay, yeah, let's go to a store.
You need to... He's against personal errands on the job.
Yeah.
But like, he's just done. Like, he can't. So might as well.
Yeah. And so they go over to a Skinner store, Summerfield,
mm-hmm.
and they're just like walking around. Angel's looking at yogurt. Danny is where else but with the action films.
Yeah, he's like reading titles to himself, like Jackie Chan's Super Cop.
The cop who can't be stopped.
There is in the bin, I think you pointed this out. Is this a Sean note?
Oh, I think this is
Sean.
Sean,
no, you know what we should call them? Sean Facts.
Sean, should we have a little ditty?
Sean Facts.
Sean Facts.
Wow, wow, wow.
The Sean Fact could be brought to you by Dreyer's Ice Cream, if Dreyer's Ice Cream were actually getting back to us.
Give me my peppermint ice cream in May.
Okay, so this Sean Fact says a copy of Shaun of the Dead is in the bin of DVDs. It was renamed Zombies Party and has a price tag over Simon Pegg's face.
Sean Fact.
Sean Fact.
Sean Fact.
Sean Fact.
Oh, this is so much better than yesterday. It's so much better. Oh,
you guys real missed out on that stuff.
Mm-hmm. So they are at the store and you hear over the intercom, Sergeant Angel to the manager's office. Sergeant Angel.
My least favorite character is the laissez-faire, you know, uniform wearing part-time stripper. What's her face?
Yeah.
She doesn't care and she chews gum on camera and I can't.
I'd like to say I've seen the actress in, I'm going to look it up and I'm going to tell you later.
Okay. Well, while Jen's looking that up, what ultimately happens in the scene is Skinner is thinking that Angel is just, you know, he's got all this time on his hands because he's just walking around and, you know, doing shopping on the clock. So things must be okay. And Skinner's just kind of like getting to him a little bit.
Yeah, he's digging at him and sounding all cryptic like you do.
Right. And so Angel says, well, maybe you shouldn't be looking at me. Maybe you should be looking at him. And Skinner turns around and he sees a guy coming out of a car.
Yeah, a poorly parked truck. And he's just like, oh, that's the refrigerator guru guy. He made a lot of money off of Guru and has aspirations for real estate. And Nicholas is like, no, I meant that guy.
Yeah, and he points down to the bright purple Lycra guy who's like shoving like biscuits right into his like everything he can.
Yeah.
And like, here's the thing. If you're going to be a thief, you really just need to grab and go.
Yes.
And this guy is grabbing. He's not so much on the going.
Yes, he manages to continuously stuff biscuits into his pockets from the time that Nicholas immediately turns from Skinner and books it to him until he's like standing stark still behind him.
It's probably like a solid minute, like knowing the layout of most,
booked it, it could be 20 seconds, but 20 seconds of shoving biscuits in your pocket is a lot of biscuit shoving time.
So they make eye contact with each other, and you do see the guy's face at this point. And
what does he say? Something like "hello there," or what does the, what does Nicholas say?
That I don't know. Matter? I don't think he says anything. I think he just looks at him like
because they go squinty eye, giant scared. I got caught eyes, squinty eye, giant scared. I got caught eyes, and then like Tude pivots and runs.
Yeah,
the actress is Alice Lowe. I've recognized her from Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Oh. Is she the girl from Garth Marenghi?
She's the psychic girl from Garth Marenghi.
Doesn't that have... Yay! She's great. Have you watched Garth Marenghi?
I've seen one episode. Who is
it
that guy?
Has to grow on
who,
you.
Who is the main actor?
The guy who's also in IT Crowd.
He's also in What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes.
Yes.
His weird voice like that.
He's great.
He's like...
What is his name?
I don't know.
He's great.
Yes.
He's
brilliant.
Yeah.
I've never not liked something he's been in because he's got this false bravado, unsure of dick size energy. I mean, you got to admit it.
Yeah. He thinks he has big dick energy, but he just.
Yeah, but yeah. It's maybe not be true.
No. Anyways.
He was in bed with that. Remember in IT Crowd, he was in bed with that chick and he's like, and just to think, you thought that I wouldn't want to be with you because you're from Iran. And she goes, no. I thought you wouldn't want to be with me because I used to be a man. But she was perfect for him, but they still broke up over it. Ugh, you and your gender norms. It was a really funny part of that show.
Okay. So bringing it back to the movie, we have this great chase scene between Purple Guy and Angel.
Admittedly, I have to say that for all the running that he's done and how like they show him getting an award for being super fast and taking a time off the 100-meter dash or whatever... He doesn't catch anyone nearly at all.
Not by running.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and they end up running through the village. They pass the living statue.
Yes. Like they show him in like three different shots and he's perfectly still in the same position each time. Beautiful continuity.
Yeah. And then guy turns the corner and then Nicholas turns the corner and you see Nicholas react as, oh, mothers. And it's just all these women with strollers coming at him.
So Danny catches up to him and he's panting because he's not a runner.
Right.
And he's like, this way. And they cut through another alleyway.
Right. And you see like a series of fences in front of him. And Danny makes like some like, oh, we can't do that. And Angel's just like, what's the matter, Danny? You've never jumped a fence before. And then he jumps a fence. And then he jumps another fence. And then he jumps another fence. And then he jumps another fence. And this is when you have to just stop.
He does a flip.
He does
one. He does a flip over the last one, like putting some polish on it.
Yeah. But this is one of those moments where you have to just stop and you have to like step back and you have to appreciate how attractive this character is.
It's and you know it's a stunt guy, but I'm still like,
oh,
that's some physical prowess right there.
Yes.
He's jovial when he's about to do it, but he's able to complete the task he's being jovial about. So he's like, boom, 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 brrr, boom.
And then Danny tries to do it and he like crashes in the first fence and then he like sort of makes it over the second one.
Does he?
Yeah. In the deleted scenes, Danny, like you actually see him hopping all of the fences, but when he gets to the very last one, he's just like, nah, and Nick Frost just runs off the camera and you hear everybody behind the camera just laughing. It's great.
Brilliant.
Aren't there fence jumps in all three of the Coronado movies?
I believe it. Oh. I think so. But we also, in this, like, also, I think that this is the scene where, as they're running through, you see the neighborhood watch keeping tabs on everybody with walkie-talkies. So we're seeing the connectivity within the town. When they're like, oh, there's a bit of trouble, giving chase, headed this way, you know, like, throughout the town.
Hmm.
That there was a movie fact.
Oh, we also, during the scene in the summer fields, we get introduced to big armed
Michael Armstrong, who was referenced earlier a little bit with the, he's got a child. My dad says he's got a child's mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And but he only says yarp.
Yeah. Fun fact from Sean's notes. Is
Sean fact.
Michael Armstrong is played by Rory McCain, who is the Hound from Game of Thrones.
That's a good Sean fact.
It's fun. It's a fun, fun Sean fact. And since we're talking about Summerfield, again, just want to say this. This was a Sean fact, too. Skinner is the fourth James Bond. Specifically, Sean noted that he was the fourth James Bond.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. Sean fact.
Sean fact. Sean fact.
Okay. I wrote, I love you, creepy grocer.
Yeah. So when they eventually catch up to the purple dude, the thief, and he comes.
Oh, they run through the. Okay. So he's running across the field. He's got some distance, right?
Right. But he like passes some of those gray hoodies that were
the hoodie kids. Yeah. And he grabs the aerosol spray can where they're committing graffiti with. Mm-hmm. We don't see anything notable on the wall that I remember. But he's like, hey, give me that. To their credit, they do, because mm-hmm. they're just hoodie kids. They're not jerk kids.
Right. And he kind of, you know, just overlooks this minor offensive so he can go ahead and go after someone who's, you know, actually stealing from a store.
Yeah, because he's not about the greater good.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you say the greater good.
Yeah, the greater good.
He is about the more important justice.
Right. Well, I asked you this yesterday, which would you consider is more offensive, theft or graffiti? And I think theft is going to be a little bit more egregious than graffiti.
Well, I struggled, I think, with this question yesterday, because I think what it comes down to is, what is the greater monetary loss? So a packet of biscuits, even a greater number of packet of biscuits, is not going to be as much as necessarily removing spray paint. But because he evaded police, I think he'd have more than, I mean, graffiti is one offense. This guy has now theft and evading arrest and disobeying a police officer, and probably a handful more sites that would be placed on him. So I think that puts him in the need for greater correction.
So it's not because of the fact that he stole, it's more the fact that he ran.
I think at this point, yeah. I mean, in terms of like monetary
loss,
give or take, if you want to put that on the scales of justice, somebody, that's how I see it.
Okay. And so Angel chucks the can. It goes and hits the guy right on the head.
I want to know if that was CGI or if they had to do multiple takes until he hit him in the head with an actual something.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I should have watched it with the commentary on. Anyways.
You can't be in charge of all the facts.
Right. And he arrests this guy, and then Danny eventually catches up, and Nicholas is like, do you know who he is? And he rambles on about who it is, and he's like, well, why didn't you tell me that earlier? And I was like, I couldn't see his face. I'm not made of eyes.
Right, because he thought he was ugly before. He's a decent-looking young man.
Right. And so they get back to the station, and lo and behold, Skinner doesn't want to press charges.
Yes. And he's like, the melted hater guy is like, nice caller. Too bad Skinner's not pressing charges.
Right.
And Skinner, he's like, why is he not pressing charges? Skinner steps right in. He's right there and he's offering everybody biscuits. Probably the purloined biscuits.
Right. Now, I only bring this up now because it's something that they kind of talk about later, is he's giving them something. He's giving the police officer something while he's like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to press charges or anything like that. And he's like, everything that happens later on, it kind of, you know, makes sense. I mean, just keep this in mind for the next thing that we kind of talk about, or the next like real big infraction that we talk about. And Angel's just like, well, this just, it doesn't seem right. And the chief steps in and says, don't worry, I'll make sure everyone gets their just desserts.
He's eating ice cream, by the way. Probably some Chunky Monkey.
Probably.
All right. So now we're in the car. I think this is where we're in the car with Danny and Nicholas. And they're doing a traffic watch, and they're as they say these things, they read out speed limits or speeds of people going by them. They're in I think they're in a 30 kilometer per hour zone. So they'll clock somebody and be like, oh, it's 27. Oh, that's 30 throughout this conversation. But the part that I want to remember is that Nicholas says, this notebook has saved my ass so many times. Mm-hmm. Use it all the time. Write everything down, right?
Right.
And Danny's like, I use mine for this. And then flip books. Like he...
Yeah.
The pages, and it's a little drawing of him, some constable shooting
a robber
in like a little striped uniform. Like, and I can't do a flip book. So I thought that was a great attention to like, just shows what Danny can do when he applies himself.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like to note that the animation of the robber is its head exploding
from one shot.
That's great. And Danny at once says, I just want to do what you do. And Angel says, you do what I do. And then they catch someone speeding. And Angel says, light the roof and punch it or something like that.
Yeah, he's like 48, punch it. And then light up the roof. And then they squeal out right after this car, which immediately pulls over.
Mm-hmm.
They squeal in behind him. It's the shortest not chase ever.
Yeah.
But when they stop, this is how boring Danny's life is. He goes, that was amazing.
Mm-hmm. And then he was like, watch this. And Angel gets out of the car and he goes over and we see a guy who's, you know, handing Angel his ID and saying, oh, I'm so sorry if I was speeding, officer. You see, I'm late for a dress rehearsal. I'm in a play of William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. And I'm playing the lead.
He uses the word homage. And it makes me want to scream.
Anyways, so we'll talk about it later. But he says that, of course, I'm playing the lead, Romeo, of course, not Juliet.
And there's a chick sitting next to him yawning, looking bored and very blonde.
And Angel's writing everything down. He's like, what are you writing? I was like, I'm just writing everything down in case I need to reference it later. And the guy's just...
He goes flustered.
Yeah, and he's, like, trying to explain everything that he's doing. And he's, you know, just, like, stop writing. And he gets so angry and everything. Mm-hmm. And to the point where he's... Angel, like, refers back to his notes and says exactly the reason why he thinks he has a right to speed.
He goes, what are you doing? Well, I have a good reason. He's like, yes, you believe that you were late for a dress rehearsal. Mm-hmm. And you feel like that gives you license to break the law mm-hmm. that has been put in place to keep people safe.
Right.
And he's like, that's preposterous. And he goes back to his notes. He goes, that's preposterous. And the guy's like, okay.
Yeah, he calms down.
I'm very sorry. It won't happen again. Right? And
right.
We cut back to the car and Nicholas is like, see what I did there?
Yeah. You like hypnotized him.
He's like, so no, I used the power of my notebook to bring the guy in line.
Right. And it kind of shows that, you know, Angel is not the typical action hero is, you know, if you're not going to do what I tell you to do, I'm going to take you out in a way that means that you're not going to live. But Angel is like, no, I'm going to do things not just by the book, but I'm going to make sure that, you know, people get to live afterwards.
He makes a difference, too. Mm-hmm. He wants to correct behavior, like overall. And that's part of his community liaison stuff. He's mm-hmm. probably going to have to deal with this guy again later, pompous jerk that he is.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that he's like setting this up for future interactions mm-hmm. is a big freaking good cop deal.
Mm-hmm.
But they go back to the station.
Right. And it's the end of the day. And Danny's like, oh, you want to go to the pub? And
he's like, no, I don't really want to. And then we turn around and the guy with the straight hair.
Right. He's like, oh, Martin Blower, the guy that he pulled over, left you a couple of tickets for his production of William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. And he's just like,
unfortunately, we cannot accept gifts from somebody that we've officially rebuked. And he tears both the tickets in half. And Danny's like, oh.
Yeah, but this is where I kind of wanted to bring up what Skinner did earlier. He's technically giving gifts to people in the squad, even though, you know, he wasn't someone who broke the law. He is still someone who's wanting to keep things in a very specific order.
Mm.
And he's giving them bits of some sort of gift, some sort of nicety to go ahead and mm-hmm. get them to be on his side.
Yeah.
And
Skinner, that good old sort.
Right.
And to a less effective degree, Blower does.
Right. But Blower doesn't get away with it. Instead, the chief says, oh, Nicholas, I was wondering if you wouldn't mind going ahead and representing us at the theater today.
And you see him crestfallen. He's like, shit.
And then he's like, and there's a spare for Danny.
And he's like, yay.
So great. And then we cut to this horrible, horrible production of William Shakespeare. Just to be clear, it is the movie by Baz Luhrmann, William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet.
Ninth grade me's heart is singing.
You see, like, Blower doing Romeo, and he, like, gets himself, like, he takes the poison, and then he, like, lays down, and then he, like, gets into position, and he's like, hey, it's your turn, you're up.
Oh, wait, you said it better. What?
Oh, yeah, doth that some poison yet hang on thy lips, and I will kiss thy lips, or something like that.
Yeah, and she goes down to kiss him, and then like she just smacks him on the face with her face, and then she goes to up, and he does that little
like
the creepiest, like, oh, that was good, I want another one, and she was like, oh, I'll oblige that, and like we're cutting back and forth between their acting and Nicholas and Danny, and Nicholas's face just becomes this widening horror, and Danny's is like, oh, this is theater, good, this is great, this is fantastic, maybe a little shocked at some points. It doesn't matter, because like then all of a sudden they both, oh, she holds a gun to her head, mm-hmm. says bang, and falls over dramatically, and then the weirdest freaking thing happens, guys.
It's a curtain call where everybody comes out and starts singing Loveful at the very end.
All of like Moulin Rouge style. So it's like very jerky and like they're like marionettes and they're just like, nah, nah, nah. Wait, how does that song go?
Love me, say that you love me. Fool me, go on and fool me. I don't care about anything but you.
And then it ends with them kicking their foot up. That's the thing that reminds me most of Moulin Rouge.
Which is another Baz Luhrmann movie. Mm-hmm.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. It explains it though. Yeah. So they do that cute little kick, the lights go out. And now we're at the after party, right?
Right. And it's at the theater. And what we get introduced to the refrigerator guy that Skinner talked about.
What's his name?
Merchant.
Of course.
And he's you know, huge friends with Blower and the lady's name is Eve Draper. And Angel is just sort of like, oh, yes, you and Mrs. Blower did a wonderful job. And
this isn't my wife.
She's like, oh.
We met at the city planning department.
Right.
And then Skinner sidles up and he's just like, oh, I bet she knows so many things. What kind of secrets would fall out if we bashed her head in?
Super creepy. And you can tell, like, the way that this actress works is she's visibly uncomfortable because, like, something very violent has just kind of been said to her, even though it was in a joking manner. She's still like,
yeah, she looks well uncomfortable.
Yeah. And
this is Lucy Punch. That she was in the Netflix series of Unfortunate Events and Dinner for Schmucks.
Oh, who was she in? And so she was in Dinner for Schmucks, you say?
Yeah, wow, Dinner for Schmucks.
That's very interesting.
Have you ever seen Dinner for Schmucks, Lydia?
I have never seen it.
Oh, it's a fine film.
Oh, okay.
Who was she in Series of Unfortunate Events? Because I've been rewatching that, actually.
Give me just a moment.
In my sad teenage lonely life, she was a little Bo Peep in Seventh Kingdom.
Oh.
It was like this mini series of like grim fairy tales, but like in a much more fantastical way. It had, I want to say Cameron, I'm maybe getting her name wrong. It's Cameron Mannheim as Snow White.
Character's name was Esme Squalor. I don't know. She's 14 of the episodes, though. So quite a few of them. She was probably part of the group, of the acting troupe.
If she was, at one point, Neil Patrick Harris's character, Count Olaf, gets a girlfriend, and she looks kind of like her. I could imagine her being that.
Esme Squalor, though, was the character's name.
Okay.
If you want to look it up.
I won't.
So after the party, Angel and Danny end up leaving, and Blower does come out, and he like is very
we forgot one of my favorite things.
Okay,
when Nicholas and Danny approaches them and says, "I want to thank you for accepting my invitation to this this soiree," and like,
yeah,
and
Danny says, "We officially can't accept gifts from people we've
officially rebuked."
So
we were required to attend by the.
Yeah, so he's like,
yeah, he's like right off, and so that's when the whole Skinner exchange happens. That's when they walk away.
It's a lot of like liquid vapor particles, just kind of like
we're not in some sort of pandemic. It's fine.
I'm pretty sure this got most of it though, so I'm gonna have to Lysol it down.
That's okay.
Anyways,
so they walk out of the party.
Blower comes out and he's just like,
"I do want to apologize to you for not obeying the law, and I'll do better." And Nicholas is like,
"Thank you, sir. Drive safe."
And Danny, this is one of our examples of Danny just fangirling all over Nicholas. He's like, "Do you remember that was the guy we pulled over earlier
for speeding?" And he's just like, "Yeah, I know."
Big.
And then they walk away. And what do we see as they're walking away?
I've titled this effect that we see several times through the film, Axe Hood Murderer.
Mm-hmm.
Hood axe murderer? Cloaken murderer.
mysterious cloak and figure.
Holocaust cloak is what they describe it as in Princess Bride.
It fits me so nice. He said I could keep it.
Anyways. Okay. Anyways, so then we see the shot of backstage, like one of the dressing rooms.
Okay, so you got to know, this guy is so smarmy. Mm-hmm. The actor is just like, he's just greasy. And he's married, but not to his leading lady. Mm-hmm. And, ugh.
So he's like, you know, like getting a champagne bottle worked. And then there's a knock at the door and it's Eve Draper. And he was like, oh, we don't really have a lot of time. And it's super creepy, but she's kind of into it.
She's totally into it. Yeah. It's the classic crappy actors falling in love with their fellow lead thing, mm-hmm, that happens sometimes. And they pour champagne and then he leans in. And of course, he's like the worst, like garbage person. He's like, to us, or some bullshit thing that isn't worth remembering.
And then they go ahead and
they clink and drink.
They clink, and then there's a knock at the door. And when they open it up, it's the hooded figure.
It just immediately slashes into the guy's face. Mm-hmm. Blood goes everywhere. She starts screaming. Blood goes on her. You know she's going to get it next. Like, they cut away to sort of the figure, and he's just whacking with his axe. And then it freeze frames with blood on our lens perspective. Jen's perspective, the fourth wall of us, there's blood on our face, and it freeze frames for a second, and then it's done.
Right. We cut to another scene where Angel is sleeping up and he gets waking up.
So good.
He wakes up by the phone, going off, and he gets it, and he's just like, hello? Yes? What about decaffeinated? And I like the fact that it was a guy waking up talking about being decaffeinated, but you said
they didn't know the word. So he should have been decapitated. He would have known and would have like sharpened up at that word.
Right. I think you're right. They just didn't know what the word was. I really do. And that's when we are at this bloody scene. We see Blower and Draper's head on the road.
Yes.
And there's all these officers around, and like at one point Fisher is talking about the possible thing that may have happened. They mm-hmm. they lost control of the car and they ran into a sign, and the sign lopped off their heads and went from over here to over here. And
she says something about topless. I've been topless a few times.
Yeah.
And then it cuts over to,
and then Walker says, ha ha ha.
You can't understand what he says, like, all the time, yeah, except for when he says, like, one word. And then you're like,
yeah.
he's an old man who's just like,
yeah. And Fisher goes over to Angel and is like, what do you think we should do? And
we should section off the area, waiting for the coroner and CSI, and we need to then open a lane of traffic to ease congestion.
And Fisher's like, right. What he said.
Very good.
And so they, you know, corner it off, a nice little montage of them doing that. And then they're bringing people through. One guy is like, what happened, Danny? And he's just like, traffic accident. And the guy's like, oh, it's a terrible way to go.
And then that car pulls away.
Yeah.
I appreciate that Angel doesn't correct Danny in front of citizens.
Yes.
It's a trait of good partnership, especially when you're dealing with the public, mm-hmm, to take somebody aside and be like, yo, actually, police procedure has us labeled these incidents collisions.
Right. And then Skinner shows up and
never has there been a tale of more woe than that of Juliet and her Romeo.
And Angel's just like, how do you know the victims of the Skinner? And he's just like, oh, it's a... No, Angel's like, what are you referring to? He's like, oh, Martin and Eve, it's a tragedy, just like the play or something.
And how do you know it was the victims?
Oh, it's a small town. News travels fast. And then he drives.
What's the song, Jen?
It's Romeo and Juliet. It's actually Dire Straits.
Love Stuck Romeo.
Okay.
God, I hate it so much. I loved that freaking version of Romeo and Juliet. I've got it memorized. The soundtrack is in my heart forever. But that song drives me nuck and futs, and I'm done with it.
Okay. I have no idea what you're talking about.
I listen to a lot of slow jam radio because I work with a lot of middle-aged people.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So.
And as Skinner drives off, Danny asks, why can't we say accidents again? And Angel says, because accident implies that there's no one to blame.
Do we cut to the detectives now?
That's what I have in my notes, so yes.
Awesome. I didn't write it in my notes, but it's implied.
Yeah. So Angel and Danny are at the Andes, and they're talking about...
I think it's suspicious,
yeah,
them dying.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just immediately dismissive, right? Mm. And Danny does the thing I love.
Oh, what was it? Like... Like the night before at the party, I think Angela had mentioned that they were having an affair, and Danny's like, "Well, what makes you think that they were having an affair?" And Angela says, "It's because we just sat through 3 hours of so-called acting, and their kiss was the only convincing moment in it."
Ah! So now he's trying to convince Andy's to like. He's trying to convince them that there might be foul play and they need to at least investigate.
Yeah.
And they're like, why should we? And that's when Danny puts his hand on Angel's shoulder and is just like, we just sat through 3 hours of so-called theater and their kiss was the only believable thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good because like Angel kind of wants to say it, but because Danny says it,
mm-hmm.
like you get this dual effect. Like Danny's super in it.
Yeah. He's a fanboy.
He truly is. And yeah. I do love a fanboy.
And then the chief comes in and asks if they're being bothered. And one of the Andes says, yes, we are.
It's all of them.
Oh, it's both of them?
Yeah, they mm-hmm. go,
yes, we are.
Well, I need you to go over to see about some hedges.
Yeah, looks like someone's clipping hedges that don't belong to him. And Angel's like, yes, sir. And that's it. Yes, sir. And so they go over to
cut to a car scene, and now yeah. they've got Walker. Oh, I got his name right?
Yes.
And Samson.
Saxon.
I got the dog's name wrong?
Well, it's the dog's name, but it's not his character's name. So you were on the right track.
So close, guys.
I think everybody forgets names.
Not like I do. Not like I do, Lydia. I'm the worst. Okay, so Saxon?
Yeah, Saxon. And Angel's like, well, why do we need the dog? And Danny's like, well, it's not the dog we need.
Now it cuts to one of your favorites.
Oh, this is Webley, and he's played by Dave Bradley, a.k.a. Filch from Harry Potter.
Hey, Filch.
Yeah, and the thing about Webley is that he doesn't know how to communicate. He's just like a lot of grunts and...
And then they turn to Walker, who's just like...
And Danny translates for Angel. A hedge is an edge. He chopped it down because it was spotted in his view. What's Reaper moaning about?
Oh, that's all well and good, and I can see your perspective, sir, but you can't go around cutting down other people's hedges.
I suppose.
Yes, I suppose. Sir, I trust that you have a permit for that firearm.
He's like, I does for this one.
He does for this one.
He does for this one.
But I love the pause that Danny puts on it, because he goes, he does for this one. And then
the shots are just so repetitive, and they're so like straight laced, and it's just light turning on over guns, light turning on over guns, light turning on over guns, and they come into this barn that is just filled with all of these weapons.
Yes,
and Angel's like,
What does Angel say right then, though?
Oh, he's like, where did you find all?
Nope, that's not it.
Oh no, it's not Angel. It's what Danny says.
Danny says it.
Yeah,
by the power of. Let's all three do it.
By the power of Grayskull!
The worst.
So great. And Angel's just like, where did you find all of these?
I just found them.
And then Danny's like, I just found them. And then he comes over to the sea mine, and Angel's like, what is this? And Danny says, it's a sea mine. And the guy says, yeah. Like so throughout this entire scene, we have translation, like a very specific.
It all goes one way, and then it goes back the other way.
The very end.
Yeah, it's so great. Good. But they start kicking it.
Angel's like, how do you know that this isn't like dangerous and could, you know, hurt someone? He's like, nah, it's just a lot of junk. And he hits it with the butt of his gun.
Yeah.
And that's when like things start clicking around in it.
Yeah, it starts ticking and they all look at each other and then they run out of the building. Walker and Saxon, go to the right of us. Webley goes to the left of us, and then our guys run straight towards camera and then jump, presumably over the trimmed hedge.
Yes. And nothing explodes. And
they stand up, and Danny goes to brush something off of, like, very, I thought, tender. Went to go brush off something on Angel's vest, and Angel just bashes his hand away, like, this is ridiculous. Yeah. My life is ridiculous. I can't even. So then they cut to the sea mine, which, as you know, is this giant metal ball with these spikes that if you bump into it, triggers the mechanism for it to explode, right? So now they've got this sea mine in the middle of this field, and Angel's on the phone, and he's like, apparently it's deactivated,
right? Yeah, it's deactivated, and they're kicking it.
So Danny and Webley are behind him, like, just beating this thing, like kicking it and hit it with a gun and stuff, and you're just like, oh no.
It's one of those great directorial decisions where they have the main action in the background even though they have characters in the foreground kind of talking.
Yes.
Yeah.
It reminds me kind of the time that Will Smith is battling the octopus alien in Men in Black.
Yeah!
The baby!
The baby.
The baby alien that he holds when he comes out is the cutest stinking thing I've ever seen in my entire life. All slimy with the big eyes.
Yeah.
It almost makes me get over my mucus thing.
Almost.
Almost.
Yeah. Baby Yoda doesn't have mucus and he also has big eyes. So.
See, this is all I've asked for. Mm-hmm. He's just a few tentacles short.
Yeah.
There are future seasons to behold.
Yeah. And then you see this montage of them like bringing through all of the guns and they're passing by the guy at the front. And Jen, you made a point yesterday that they don't tell him nothing.
Yeah, they just walk in past him.
Oh, yeah. This anytime that you see the cop and he's got the curly hair, he literally has everything pass by him and nobody ever tells him nothing, which he actually says.
Yeah.
Every time.
Nobody ever tells me nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the most quotable line to me in the movie.
Yeah.
My most quotable line is, have you ever shot two guns whilst flying through the air?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So then he goes, what do you want to do tonight? I don't know. Pub?
Yeah. And Danny's like, okay, what can I get you that isn't a cranberry juice? And
I don't want to get too drunk. What's your wine selection?
And he's like, we got red and we got white.
I'll take a pint of lager.
Yeah. And so they're sitting down. Danny is like, Danny's glass is almost empty and Angel's barely touched his. He's making notes.
He's whipped out his notebook, his notebook. And he's like, Danny says, you really can't ever turn it off, can you?
Right.
Well, that's what you sound like my ex-girlfriend or something like that.
And Danny asks him what made him want to be a police officer.
Oh, my uncle got me. Oh, I'm going to quote this all wrong.
Yeah.
But he's like, when I was five, my uncle bought me a police officer push car and I would go around the neighborhood and I would be arresting kids twice my size for littering and spitting. And Danny says,
oh, he sounds like a wonderful guy.
Turns out he was embezzling and selling drugs.
To kids.
To kids.
What a rike.
He's like, but I never forgot that feeling. That I wanted to bring that true justice and righteousness to the police force. But he makes a really cute comment. He goes, except I've always wanted to be a cop, except for like the summer of 79 when I wanted to be Kermit the Frog.
Right. And Angel asks Danny what he wanted.
No. Then he finishes the story. I always wanted to bring a sense of security and righteousness to the police force. And then Danny says,
that's a shame. I think you would
have. And then he pauses.
I was like, I think you would have made a great Muppet.
And it's like, wah, wah.
And that's when Angel asks him, well, what made you want to be a police officer?
And you described this so much better than I do.
And Danny says, I guess my dad's a police officer and he wanted that ever since my mom passed. And so he was like, oh, do you mind asking how she died?
Super respectful.
Yeah. And Danny says, he takes a moment and he's just sort of like, traffic collision. And then that's it.
Because remember, he was corrected about collision and accident before and the very big difference between the two.
Right. And the tension's really high. They're having a really heavy moment. And Danny breaks it up by saying, hey, you want to see something? And he puts...
No pause.
Puts his hand right up to his eye, grabs a fork and stabs his eye. And there's like blood going everywhere. And Angel's like, what is going on? Oh my goodness. And then Danny pulls out this little ketchup pack. And he's like, ha 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 ha.
And that's when I told you yesterday.
Yeah. Please tell it again.
I'm going to try. It's not really great about me as a human being, but back when, right out of high school, when we were like hood rats-ish, who would like hang out in Cherries and chain smoke and like nurse coffees with too much sugar and cream in it. We had this really great waitress who would like come over and like smoke a cigarette at our table really quick before she filled out our cups. She was amazing. We were like, look, we're going to tip you really well, but we are only going to order like three appetizers and like all the coffee. We got banned after a while, but it doesn't matter. What would happen was if I was with somebody that I was trying to impress or I thought I was going to be funny that evening, I would like palm a creamer tub? What do you call it? A creamer cup.
Container?
Yeah. I would palm one because we'd be using copious amounts of them. So I'd just kind of slither it under the table and I'd lean in, especially if I thought the person was what we would now call a weeb, but back then would be like a mark, like somebody who was like, somebody who I thought was like gonna fall for it. And I would go, oh man, my eye itch is so bad. And I would complain about it for a minute or two and I would rub my eye so it got all red. And I'd be like, oh Jesus, I can't, there's really something in my eye and I can't stand it. Can you look? And I'd have the person come in close and look and I'd like hold out my waterline and I'd be like, can you see anything? And then they'd be like, no, I can't see anything. And I'd be like, oh, it just burns so bad. And then I'd pick up a fork from the table and I'd put my other hand over my eye and I would shove the fork into the creamer packet and squeeze and white creamer would just go all over the table and the person would not see it coming. It would be like and I would, and to my credit, as far as this doesn't do anything to my credit, I would try to clean it up. But oftentimes I'd have to ask for a rag from the wait staff and they were not happy.
Yes.
Not that lady who would chain smoke at our table, but like the rest of them.
Yeah. So, but this goes ahead and makes Angel like, you know,
it happy. Breaks the tension. Yeah. It's really good.
And they like get like a few more rounds of beer. Mm-hmm. And well, Angel's going.
It's montage too. It's like, it's like they. It's like they would hand over these British notes. So they'd be like a fiver and a 10, 10, yeah. Fiver. They've done it like four or five rounds.
Mm-hmm. And as Angel is going to pick up another round, he sees Skinner talking with Merchant. And Merchant, because he was friends with Blower and Draper, he's just like in tears. He's just really broken up about it.
He's a sincere character.
Right.
He's a bit of a hot mess.
Right. But he like, you know, stumbles off to, you know, go ahead and relieve himself. Mm-hmm. But Skinner comes up and is cryptic again with Angel. He's like, oh, he'll be in bits tomorrow. And this like sets Angel and he's just sort of like,
Skinner walks away and he's holding Angel's holding two pints and he goes to lean against the bar and his arm slips and he spills like half a beer. And then, of course, the police commissioner. Nope. The chief of police is right behind him. He goes, someone's a little drunk. And he's a little drunk. Mm-hmm. But I'm not that drunk, sir.
Yeah. He's like, I'm not talking about you.
And they both pivot. And then there's Merchant pissing on a video game machine.
Yeah.
Probably a betting machine, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And is this when he turns and he falls and he's like, I'm all right.
I think so.
He's like, you need to get him home.
Yeah.
So he and Danny have... they have one. This is a shorter man, and I don't have anything against it.
Yeah,
but these Danny and Angel are about the same height, so they've got one of his arms around each of their necks, and his feet are not touching the ground very well or at all. Yeah. And then Danny says,
"Oh, I guess we got a little drunk tonight because he's little and drunk."
Oh,
it's great.
That's beautiful.
And so they end up taking Merchant to his home. He's got this big old gaudy gate.
Previously, Skinner mentioned that he had a gaudy estate.
Right, and doesn't really blend well with the village's aesthetic.
Yes.
And so they drop him off at the front door, and he's like, oh, thank you. How much do I owe you? And
20 pounds.
And Angel gives that to Danny, and then Angel takes the pound.
Yeah, Merchant gives a 20 quid is what he says to Danny. And Angel grabs it out of his hand, and your change, sir.
And he's like, oh, thank you. And it's like, you don't think that Danny's doing it maliciously?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
He was just drunk. And he was like, yeah, no, 20 quid for a ride home.
Yeah.
Perfect.
But they did technically provide a service.
I mean, they did. And they were off hours. So.
Yeah. So I'm just saying they could totally justify that. He opens up his towel. So he falls down. He's like, oh, I'm okay.
And they're like, all right, justice, sir. I mean,
yeah.
Done. And they just walk away.
Right. And as they walk away, there's a mysteriously cloaked shadow in the
a murder axe, dude. Yeah.
If you're experiencing a bit of arrested development during your extended stay indoors, a plotter, we've got good news. We're only about half of the way through our four-part review of Hot Fuzz. Hey, this is your audio engineer and small-town socialite, Jen. Want to provide some feedback or enjoy a bit of banter? Messages to us using @ShockedAndApplaud on Facebook or Twitter using @ShockedApplaud are a great way to keep the conversation running between episodes. We may even read your comments out loud in a future episode. Leaving a review on your favorite podcasting app or donating $1 per month are also great ways to help support us in reaching our audience goals. Check out our support link in the episode description or @ShockedAndApplaud.com. Our invested investigation into the plot will continue in part 3 next week. From Shocked to the Plot, thank you for patroning the peculiar.